do we need it?
Now.
When do we need it?
Now.
What do we want?
Jobs.
What do we want?
Jobs.
Third world countries require you to hire people from their countries when you do work there. Other states and cities do it, and D.C. should do it, said community activist and civil rights attorney Donald Temple on Tuesday as he marched with more than 50 others to the 11th Street Bridge, which traverses the Anacostia River, connecting downtown D.C. to Anacostia, where unemployment stands at 30%. The $300 million reconstruction of the 11th Street Bridge is not benefiting Anacostia residents, according to demonstrators. Michael Iruan of the Washington Post reported, "The project, the district's largest ever transportation construction endeavor, began in December 2009 and is scheduled to be finished in 2013. Despite its size, duration, and location beside some of Washington's neediest communities, the protesters contended that few people from those neighborhoods have landed jobs on the project. Addressing protesters in Anacostia Park overlooking the 11th Street Bridge, Ward 8 Councilmember Marion Barry said,
"I could not wait to come here. Because you know, all of my adult life, I've been fighting for people. People who need help. People who are vulnerable. People, some of whom, given up hope. Because I believe that in the richest country in America, richest city in America, everybody who wants to work ought to have a job to work. Then you had a D.C. government awarding, I think, over $300 million contract over there. Right here on the entryway to Ward 8, which has 35% unemployment. We got people trained, ready to go to work. The first source is a joke. There's no enforcement to it. And many of us on the council are writing legislation now to try to get it enforced. Right now, there is no enforcement. So we're going to enforce it with our feet, aren't we? We're going to enforce it with our voices, aren't we? We're going to enforce it with our votes, aren't we? You know, we're going to vote out those who won't support us and vote in those who will. Right? 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 And so we have some on the council who's not very sensitive to us. We got some who are. Those who are not, let them know we're coming. We're not going to give up, give in, and give out. We can't just talk that talk. We got to walk that walk. Walk that walk. Every member of the council ought to be here. Mayor Gray ought to be here. We elected him, and I'm a friend of his politically and socially. But I don't believe that we ought not to push for more jobs for D.C. residents, not just on construction sites, but everywhere, everywhere. There are 300 jobs in the private sector in D.C. Look at our hotels, our restaurants, our other places, our retail, everything. We ought to be able to get some work. For those who need training, the D.C. government ought to train everybody, everybody who needs training. Everybody who needs training. So I came out just to show my support. This is not the end of it. It's not new to me. I'm a stranger of I'm not a stranger to protests. I love protests. I love people speaking up, standing up, fighting for themselves.
Dante Lee, a certified minority contractor, also addressed protesters. He was introduced by Donald Temple.
If you're spending money from the District of Columbia for a contract in the amount of $300 million, and within 2 miles of where this site is, you're telling us that you can't find a qualified plumber, a qualified electrician, a qualified carpenter, a qualified laborer. We know a brick mason, a welder, we know that that is not true. There's no excuse. And what's critical is that we have to make the right demands to ensure accountability when it comes to jobs for our community, when it comes to economic development in our community. And with that, I wanted to acknowledge the contractors, because as much as they have employees, we have minority contractors and local contractors who are also in business who are being excluded from working on these particular sites. And that's wrong. So what's critical is that what Marion Barry's talking about relative to First Source is that we need to have local workers working when there's local money. But what he also said is important. You can't go to sleep, family. We have elections coming up, and people have to stop treating us like we're invisible, like they don't see us. They have to stop treating us in a way, in a double standard, because you're from D.C. and somebody else is from Maryland or Virginia or West Virginia. They got to treat us like the men that we are and like the women that we are in our families. We have families like people in West Virginia. We have families like people in Maryland. But because we live east of the river, there's some reason to deny us jobs with dignity, jobs with respect. And so we're going to stand up and continue to stand up and fight. We're not just going to fight with our feet if necessary, and we have to. We'll fight in the courts. We'll fight in the legislative bodies and the political bodies, but we can't stop. We have to rise and we have to organize to protect our interests, not just about us, but about our children and about their children. Some people look at this work and they have businesses. They do the business side of the work. And I just wanted to give this brother an opportunity to say a few words.
How y'all doing? I'm Don Lee. Here on behalf of Complete Solutions, a certified minority contractor that hires, I don't want, the majority of people that look like you. We got 10 of our guys here with us in support of everything y'all doing. And if we get any of this work, we looking for y'all to come and make this happen. Of course, you know why we here. We can't get any of the work. So I'm just here in support. We knocked off another job early to come here to be with y'all and stand with y'all. And we're going to stay here until we get it done.
That's right.
All right. All right.
As he marched with more than 50 others to the 11th Street Bridge, Donald Temple said,
explain what's taking place right now.
Right now is, people protesting because they're being excluded from the job market at a time when there are major construction contracts using federal money and D.C. money and building projects right here in the community where they live. And the jobs are going to people from West Virginia, Maryland, Virginia, and they tell these people that they're not qualified. They tell these people that they have to come for a construction drive and present a written resume on a particular day between certain hours. A resume to dig a ditch. A resume for an electrician. A resume for a carpenter. It's insane. So the district residents whose tax money is being used to finance projects are being excluded from participating in the economic benefits of the contract, of the commercial engagement. So there's a double standard. So you're better off if you live in Maryland applying for a job in D.C. where it's a $300 million contract using federal and state and city money. It's insane.
Is it because district residents don't want to work that these jobs are going to folks not in the district?
You got 600,000 residents in the District of Columbia. 10% of that is 6,000. 1/10 of 1% of that is 600 workers. You're going to tell me that in a city like the District of Columbia, that all of a sudden you can't find 600 workers for construction jobs? You can't find 2,000 workers for construction jobs? That's an insane proposition. What's happening is that these people who are not from the District of Columbia are feeding into stereotypes that are class and race-based stereotypes. Just because we're in the southeast part of the city, people think that if you're a black man, that you have some addiction problems or you have some work problems or you won't work, you can't work. That's ludicrous. And so they hold these people here to a higher standard. And they exclude them for reasons that have no basis in reality. It's mythology. These men and these women want to work, and they will work if they're given the opportunity. And further, if they don't have the skills, they're trainable like anybody else, any place else. Third world countries require you to hire people from their countries when they do work. Other states and cities do it, and D.C. should do it and enforce it and require these corporations to respect the rights of the local citizens. Particularly if they're benefiting and they're making money, then the little people, so to speak, the people who don't have the same opportunities or suffering economically, should have some opportunity and benefit from the contracts that are given to these major contractors, construction companies, and developers. That's elementary math in our American system.
The project that's being protested now is a bridge from downtown to east of the Anacostia River, which seems symbolic in a lot of ways. Can you talk about the differences between the rest of the city and east of the Anacostia River?
East of Anacostia is kind of anecdotal to, like, the railroad tracks in most of our cities, you know, and the predominantly black populations live across the tracks. In D.C., the predominant poor black population lives east of the river traditionally. Well, now there is development east of the river, consistent with the gentrification that we've seen in the District of Columbia, and businesses, construction, change is coming east of the river. So there are economic opportunities and there are jobs. What we're insisting on is that in that change, that we have, we feed the existing community. We give them the benefit of this economy instead of excluding them, and then ultimately when the economy shifts, forcing them out of the very communities where they live. That's preposterous. That's what we resent. It's a modern day form of colonialism, so to speak. So this is insane. So the people are only asking for respect, economic justice, economic dignity. They're not asking to take over business. They're asking to be able to work from 8 to 4, 8 to 5, 9 to 5, like anybody else. These are people who are physically able, intellectually able, and technically qualified to do these jobs. So there's no reason that people can come here and work at these sites. Some of these people, I've never spent a dollar in the District of Columbia, have no interest in the District of Columbia. And they exclude them, and then they pay them lower wages. That's unacceptable.
One of the issues that then Council Chairman Vincent Gray ran on was to implement the first source agreements. How is he doing on that? What does he need to do?
I think that the first source agreement is like strict liability. If we're going to have laws, then the law should be enforced. Period. It's not about gamesmanship, either on the corporate side or in the government side. Further, it's the responsibility of city council leaders, black and white, to look carefully at the implication of the first source agreement and the failure to enforce it on the citizens who would be affected. That's not happening. There's too much politics on both sides. And the laws are not being enforced, and the people's rights are not being protected. Simple as that. And there are some corporations that understand it and that will do it. And the corporations need to do it without being forced to do it. It's good business sense.
It's a related issue, the ban the box. A lot of district residents, particularly east of the river, are excluded from employment because they have to check that they've been convicted of a crime. But disproportionately, I remember reading a piece by Ren Smith of City Paper that while whites, blacks use marijuana about the same rate, 91% of those arrested for marijuana use in the District of Columbia are African American, which is emblematic of a justice system which locks up so many black people. And then after that, the punishment for the crime has been done, but then gaining employment is not done because when you check that box, you are by and large excluded from the job market.
Well, that depends. I mean, there are places that recognize that and who also realize that when people do commit a crime and they repay society by doing their time and they come back out, there are many functional citizens who have been incarcerated. Unfortunately, in the African American community, the economic circumstances oftentimes, along with other historical kind of situations, have caused this disproportionate number of African American men in the criminal justice system. That's not an issue. We know that for a fact, and that's a reality. But because someone has been in the criminal justice system, it doesn't mean that you crucify them, you hang them on the cross. It's not a death sentence. You know, young people make mistakes, and when there is a fragile economy, whether it's in D.C., New York, or Philadelphia, and people need jobs, if you don't give them jobs, they still have to eat. And sometimes they have to feed their families. So how do you do it? You know what I mean? What do they do? And so I think that that box is relative. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that a person can't or shouldn't work. A person, if they're able to work, you give them a shot. If they can't work and they live in this community and they're physically able and intellectually able, then maybe you have an apprentice program. You know, some of these guys here, they didn't start off working on construction. They came in, and unfortunately, many of them been exploited in low-wage construction jobs, and they developed skills that way, particularly in the immigrant population. So there's no way we shouldn't protect the rights of our citizens here in the District of Columbia and prioritize, you know, finding a way to bring them into the employment sector.
What will happen if action isn't taken to bring jobs east of the river? We're in Ward 8, where unemployment stands at some 30%.
It depends. You know, I mean, I think that you have to fight on many fronts. Today we're fighting on the street side of it. There's people convening, and predominantly men, who said they want to work. They also have to fight with the city leadership. You know, the games can't be played at the city council level relative to the enforcement of the law. You know, the council has to move off the dime, and whatever needs to be done politically and legislatively needs to happen. And then I think in the courts, I think that this, it may be time for litigation. I mean, it makes no sense that a corporation will make misrepresentations regarding its interest in the local economy in securing the contract award. And then when the contract award is made, they change the rhetoric, they change the game. They didn't say, hey Thomas.
How you doing?
How you feel, man? They didn't say that they wouldn't help D.C. when they wanted the business. When they get the business, then they abandon the district. You know, this is unacceptable to our community, and I think it's unacceptable to the African-American community. I don't care if they're lawyers, doctors, engineers, janitors, teachers. I don't care what it is. The hypocrisy and the duplicity is outdated. You know, you can't come and use us and then tell us you love us, you know, on the next hand. That's not the case. And so everything is becoming more and more transparent. I think that here in the district, to answer your question, I think people are waking up slowly but surely, and they're getting a wake-up call. You can't have somebody come into the community and spend $300 million on a bridge, and then you tell me you can't find qualified people within 10 blocks of the location of this construction project. You know.
Mayor Gray ran on the campaign slogan of One City, and Fenty overwhelmingly won in wards 2 and 3, and Gray did much better in wards 7, 8, and 5, and those are very different demographically. Do people in wards 2 and 3 have a sense of what is going on and the needs that people have that are not being met east of the river, do you feel?
I think not. I mean, it's not one city now, and it won't be one city later. The economics of the city dictate that there's a significant class and race dynamic in this town. The people in the wealthier wards, including 4, 1, 2, and 3, are disconnected from that reality. They don't have to be connected to the reality. You don't have to be connected to that reality if you have a job. You don't have to be connected to the reality if you're able to pay your mortgage. You don't have to be connected to that reality if you can pay to send your kids to school. You don't have to be connected to that reality if you got money to buy groceries or you have money to buy gas. So they're not connected, and it's something that they'd rather not deal with. And I think the Gray election really epitomized that. The resentment towards Adrian and the election of Gray and the numbers show the dichotomy. No, people are rhetorically and intellectually sensitive, but not pragmatically or actually morally committed anymore. You know, as long as it's not in their backyard. And that's the tragedy in the District of Columbia. We're in two cities, and we're going to be in two cities for a long time.
Thanks. Yeah.